Coming up on the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast, the Indiana State Fair makes its return. A new immersive art experience comes to Newfields in Indianapolis. Unite Indy looks to help former inmates find work. A new clinical trial aims to help patients without them having to leave home. Indiana launches another new tool to help fill its advanced manufacturing pipeline. We preview the high school fall sports season and highlight Black Restaurant Week Midwest Indianapolis. Welcome to the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. I'm Andy Ober. A treasured Hoosier tradition has returned as the Indiana State Fair is underway. Last year's event was canceled because of the pandemic. State Fair Director Cindy Hoy spoke with Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick about the fair's economic impact and how the fairgrounds has evolved into year-round big business.
You're ready for the grind, right? Ready for the fair.
We can't wait to launch this state fair.
Especially a year after last year, where there was no fair, and you're really going to be celebrating the resilience of Indiana.
Right, and that resilience of that Hoosier spirit and really a tough year and a half. And we are so excited to be back, as you said. And I think there is just this... this normalcy that people want to get back to, and State Fair is one of their traditions. And so starting July 30th through August 22nd, the fair will be there for people. We're going to close on Mondays and Tuesdays. That was planned because of COVID. That gave us a chance to refresh the buildings, clean, make sure everything was in tip-top shape for our customer. And we're going to keep that model and see what happens this year.
Yeah, new schedule. Give us a couple of highlights that we can maybe look forward to this year's fair.
Well, highlight is a great way to say it. We have a gigantic Ferris wheel. There are only three in the state or three in the country, and it is 150 feet tall. They're gondolas, so they're not just open air. They're enclosed gondolas that will go up, and really you'll be able to see the city of Indianapolis and the whole fairgrounds and the north side, and will really be one of those spectacular, can't-miss attractions for this year's fair. We have a Lego exhibit that's new. We have an exhibit called Forever Forest, brought by the Indiana Hardwood Lumbermen's Association. That will be new and different. Another double-decker carousel. So all those new things. But then, Gary, as we know, our Hoosiers love all those fair foods and the new ones that are coming out this year.
You talk about the view of Indianapolis and the fairgrounds. Both have changed dramatically over the years. Certainly, when you look at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, it is a year-round destination, $200 million plus in direct economic impact, and it's changing. You're really looking to the future. You look at the Coliseum, the basketball, the Horizon League, and IUPUI, and March Madness was hosted this year, which was quite an event.
Right. I call this a Cinderella story for March Madness from a venue standpoint, right? Never would have thought the Indiana Farmers Coliseum would be in that position, but we look at this operation. Our gates are never closed. We're 250 acres in the heart of Indianapolis, job equivalency of 1,100 jobs that are because of this historic institution. And when we look at renovating spaces, building new spaces, we're not only looking at the fair, but also how do we maximize the usage of that space throughout the year?
Yeah, and a great example, I think, you're going to break ground very soon, be a ceremonial event, I think, during the fair for the Fall Creek Pavilion. This is a major facility, $50 million, and it's about more than agriculture, right?
Right. So if you, this is a 100-year-old open-air structure that we are going to convert into an enclosed space that will maximize the usage throughout the year. It'll be a premier facility for the swine showcase, but also it'll be a premier facility for some other potential ideas we're kicking around, as maybe an indoor track and field venue with a temporary track that will fit nicely in between the columns so that we can become part of the landscape with the Sports Corporation and the City of Indianapolis elevating sports. In addition to that, it will also be a nice piece of real estate for our typical and long-term customers like Boat Sport and Travel Show, Mecum Car Auction, that are constantly looking, how can we develop and expand our spaces for our customers and our products?
Yeah, so it would seem that you really feel the fairgrounds potentially could be a real part of the sports movement here in Indianapolis and Indiana. You talk about the Coliseum. Coliseum and basketball, track and field, the potential there as well.
Right, right. So we're at the stage right now of developing our research, making sure that we have the business plan that all makes sense. We're putting the shovel in the ground so that structure will begin changing over in this fall. It will not be in use for the fair of 22, but we'll come back with some different plans, and then we will open the doors for the fair of 23.
All right. Indiana State Fair Commission Executive Director Cindy Hoy. Cindy, thanks for joining us. I know you're rested up and ready to go.
We can't wait to show people this edition of the fair.
That's good.
164 years.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Good luck this year and beyond. Thanks for joining us.
Student innovators and entrepreneurs at Indiana University are getting some support through the Shoebox Fund. The program is part of the Shoemaker Innovation Center at the IU Luddy School of Informatics, Computing, and Engineering. Director Travis Brown joined us with more on the program.
Okay, let's talk about, first of all, the Shoemaker Innovation Center. That's a part of the Luddy School that launched about 3 years ago, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And as part of that, the incubator program, the Shoebox, you know, great name, great connection to the parent, if you will. Talk about the incubator and how it works.
Yeah, so the way it's set up, the Shoemaker Innovation Center is an academic center. We have speakers and the things that you would normally expect in any type of entrepreneurship academic center. But the Shoebox, on the other hand, is an incubation program where students from across campus, it's across disciplines, across majors, so we have bachelor students, master's students, doctoral students in the program. At any given time, we'll have 30 teams in there. Once accepted, they have 24/7 access, and it's a community where they are accountable to each other. So they have to show up every week, give updates to each other. We have lawyers come in, venture capitalists come in to provide resources to them. So the Shoebox is the incubation program, the Shoemaker Innovation Center, the academic center.
So this is really, you know, where the action is, where the action happens, the excitement and taking student ideas and kind of business plans and creating real companies. We've got a couple of examples. One of them is Shuffle Me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Shuffle Me is the technology. There is really about emotion detection, and that's the way that they set up that company. It's also run by an engineering doctoral student. That company in particular actually received an investment through the Shoebox Fund, which I know we'll be talking about.
Yeah. Another company, another example, Deep Word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Deep Word, it's an interesting company in that the student running that came out of the Kelly School, and so the Kelly School of Business, and you essentially can create content that you can put words in other people's mouths. It's a little unsettling how good they are at doing it.
Yeah, so. Interesting. Two great examples of innovation and student innovation growing at IU. You mentioned the Shoebox Fund. Mm-hmm. Talk about that and how that is really going to be a key part of this overall process and funding some of these ideas.
Yeah, thanks. So Donna and John Shoemaker have provided the funding for all of this. I mean, they're wonderful people. They're great donors. And so when they support the Shoemaker Innovation Center, we immediately started to see results. And so it's become the hub for entrepreneurial activity when it comes to student entrepreneurs on the Bloomington campus. And once they saw that, they suggested, well, what about launching an investment fund for those students? And so with IU Ventures and the IU Philanthropic Venture Fund that we have at IU, I reached out to Terry Willey, the executive director, and asked her about partnering to launch a fund now known as the Shoebox Fund to invest in the clients that are going through the Shoebox. And that's precisely what we've done. And Shuffle Me and Deep Word were our first two investment recipients.
Yeah, I've got to imagine that the Shoemaker Center and certainly the fund now are attractors or magnets for talent, for student talent. And you look at you mentioned Terry Willey, Dr. Don Karatko, the talent yourself there, that's got to be an attractor for folks who want to be involved.
Yes, it is. Students definitely are, I've had students, a couple of them already, who have come to IU who have said that the primary reason they came was because of the center. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's certainly the case. Also, what's great is for our external partners, they look at the center as a hub of entrepreneurial activity, mm-hmm. whereas in the past, it's been very difficult to ascertain where are these students located. You know, it's one-offs, and now we have them aggregated, and it's yep. really a great thing to see.
Igniting Innovation at Indiana University. Travis Brown is the director at the Shoemaker Innovation Center. Travis, thanks for joining us. We look forward to having you on the show soon.
Thanks very much.
All right.
An immersive art experience designed to stimulate all five senses is lighting up the fourth floor space at Newfields in Indianapolis. Around Indiana reporter Mary Rachel Redmond takes us to The Loom.
He's one of the most celebrated and influential artists of all time. Vincent van Gogh revolutionized the way the world saw art. Now Newfields is doing somewhat the same for Hoosiers.
With this experience, we are able to introduce art and revolutionize art for everyone here in Indianapolis and the state.
The Loom took nearly 2 years to complete and is the work of Grand Experiences, a tech company out of Australia specializing in multimedia art all over the world. Now providing Newfields with its largest exhibit in the museum's 137-year history.
First of all, the magnitude of it, you know, the size, taking up our entire fourth floor. We have 150 high-definition projectors, which covers about 30,000 square feet of projection space. You see Van Gogh's images come to life, moving as you're in it.
The Loom has over 258 million pixels of color and images flooding the gallery from floor to ceiling. Definitely a different way to experience art and engage all the senses.
It's like you're standing in a painting as it's being painted around you. And you'll see Van Gogh's images. You'll see them subtly come to life. Also, there's a little bit of an aroma. There's some scent that is released like in those bucolic countryside scenes that gives you the feeling like you're actually there.
And after leaving the digital realm of the Loom, you get to see the real thing.
You walk through, you see these brilliant brushstrokes, you see it all come to life, and then you see the actual painting right in front of you. And it's just amazing. I've seen groups of people elbowing their way up in front of the Van Gogh just to get a look at an original Van Gogh that's been in our collection since 1944.
And officials at Newfields say for those that don't typically gravitate to art or art museums, the Loom is a perfect way to start.
So this is a way that people can come, maybe a little bit leery of coming to a museum in the first place. So they can come up here, they can experience the Loom, they can walk in, consume art a little differently. And then we have some interpretation space that helps explain the style of painting that Van Gogh had. And then when you get to the end, you have a better understanding of Van Gogh and his art.
Mary Rachel Redmond, Inside Indiana Business.
Jim and Nancy Cotterill launched Unite Indy 4 years ago in hopes of helping those living in poverty find jobs. Now they're helping inmates do the same when they get released. President Jim Cotterill came on the show to explain how the program works.
Talk about Unite Indy, because, sure, again, you started 4 years ago with the intent to really help those in poverty, and you've really kind of, I know, expanded or narrowed that mission here. Talk about the organization.
Yeah. Well, in order to help people in poverty, we thought the best way to do that was to bring work to the table, jobs that pay a living wage. And in doing that, and in meeting urban pastors and other folks who are real involved in these communities, what we learned is the people that have the hardest time getting jobs are those who have been incarcerated. And that, through a long story, which we don't have time for, we got involved kind of with that community, and it just, we're really zeroed in on it now. We're laser focused on that population.
And the number of offenders coming out of incarceration on an annual basis, just specifically here in Marion County, is a big number.
12,000 a year.
Wow.
It's astounding.
Wow.
Yeah,
and they face obviously big challenges in obtaining work. I mentioned a report that was released this week. You were part of that report. Had some interesting findings.
Yeah. Butler University's Lacey School of Business did some research that we were one of the sponsors of, along with the International Warehouse Logistics Association and a company called Allegiant Staffing. And what it told us, it's kind of counterintuitive than the way most of us, or to the way most of us think. And I would normally have thought, well, if somebody's really a serious offender, that's not who I really want working with my staff, right, when I was in business.
Right.
And the study showed us exactly the opposite. The more serious the offense, a felony versus a misdemeanor, the better performers the workers are.
And these were surveys of companies who've hired ex-offenders, and they're giving you the scoop on that.
Oh, yeah. It's actually from data. It's not from their opinion. It's from data in the employment folders of what's happened with those people. Have they been advanced? Mm-hmm. Have they gotten better jobs? Do they make more money now? Their own kind of measurements are considered in there.
Yeah.
So anything that's been done before this are just opinion surveys. This is real hard data.
So as you look at this urban unemployment crisis, I think many people will describe it as your efforts would seem to be an opportunity there to connect a lot of people with job opportunities. You've connected, I think, by word of mouth with a number of companies
yes.
who've hired folks. Talk about that process and how you think it can have a real impact.
Yeah, we started a website about a year and a half ago. We called it secondchanceindy.com. And we went out to recruit employers who are willing to offer a second chance. And through word of mouth, we found a number, 10, I think maybe 12, mm-hmm. signed up right away. So we thought, well, we'll start with this group. And we did that, and we got some people to go to them, and we got jobs flowing, and things really started. And just through word of mouth, that's grown. It's more than doubled. It's about 25 now. Uh-huh. And we didn't have the study to show the results that mm-hmm. these people are well worth taking a chance on.
Yeah, and you think it can grow exponentially. And yeah. the front-end training, I know you think, is really important. Part of the equation, right?
You bet. Yeah, if you're coming out of incarceration, it's a whole different atmosphere than the workplace culture,
yeah.
right? So first of all, you got to go back to the basics and let people know that they were designed to work, they're made to work, there's dignity in work, work's a good thing, it can support mm-hmm. your family through work,
right.
all that. And then, of course, how to write a resume
yeah.
and how to go through an interview. We take employers right into the class. So we'll be in the Marion County Jail conducting right. these classes, and we'll be taking employers in there with us.
Jim Cotterill, Unite Indy, really a great program. We look forward to following it. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Thank
All
you.
Right.
Remember, you can catch Inside Indiana Business Television on stations throughout the state every weekend. Head to InsideIndianaBusiness.com to check listings. Community Health Network is conducting its first ever Phase 1 clinical oncology trial. The healthcare provider is looking to bring treatments to patients without them having to leave home. Medical Director of Oncology Research, Bert O'Neill, spoke in the Business of Health.
Talk about the significance of this Phase 1 clinical trial. First one that community has done, really only a handful of hospitals do this kind of thing. Why is it important?
To me and I think to the leaders of community, it's important because historically patients have had to travel to large centers, perhaps in Chicago or Texas or other cities to get access to experimental medicines when they have a condition where standard treatment has failed. And that's very common in cancer for standard treatments to work for some time, but then stop. And so really what's important to us is having access to these experimental medicines here in Indiana so that our patients can be treated with them mm-hmm. in the same place they've received their rest of their treatment rather than having to go to a strange place and travel for treatment.
Yeah. Talk about this particular trial, the patient identified through genomic testing. How does the process work?
Well, things have changed a lot in cancer in the last 10 years. We now can get a tremendous amount of genetic information about a cancer. Every cancer is different, even cancers that start in the same place can be very different genetically. And sometimes understanding what those genetic mutations are specifically can lead to specific drugs. And there's an ever-increasing number of examples of drugs that are created specifically to interact with a particular molecular abnormality. And so as these new drugs come out, we can find a patient based on genetic testing and match them with a trial that makes the most sense for them with one of these new medications.
And the speed, the efficiency, the speed in which you can do the process, the clinical trial is really critical, right? And I know you have a partnership with the biotech company I mentioned, Tempus, a really important part of the process.
Yeah, correct. I think Tempus has really set up a very innovative system where we have all of the pieces in place to open a number of trials, but we don't actually have to open them all because that's difficult to do. But rather, when we do genetic testing and identify a person who would be eligible for one of those studies, we can actually get that trial open in 2 weeks and put that very patient on that trial right here at our center. So this is a capability that really relatively few places yeah. have had, and really exciting that we can bring it to Indiana.
Well, you mentioned 2 weeks. What would be a traditional timeline to do something like that?
Often, depending on the center and how contracts work, it could be anywhere from 2 to 6 months to get a trial open.
Wow.
So you really couldn't tell a patient, oh, we have this trial for you and we're going to have it open 4 months from now. That's not that's not really practical. So this Tempus network really gives us a capability that I think is really pretty revolutionary.
Yeah, as you look to the future of clinical trials at community, you see this as an area that you'd like to grow.
Absolutely. This will definitely be a big piece of our clinical trial portfolio is this Tempus trial menu, so to speak. But we're also opening studies through partnerships with other pharma companies, including Lilly here in town, but Amgen, AstraZeneca, Janssen, you name it. We've been surprisingly successful, given that we're new to this, in getting people to commit trials to us. So I think within the next year, we're going to be looking at maybe 15 to 20 early phase studies open at community.
Very good. Clinical trial focus at Community Health Network. Dr. Burt O'Neill, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. We'll be following the story.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
There's a new strategy in place in Indiana to help the state fill its advanced manufacturing and logistics workforce pipeline. Ivy Tech Community College President Sue Elsperman and Kinexus Indiana Chief Talent Programs Officer Bradley Rohrer joined us in our Eye on Education segment with more on the campaign.
Brad, I'm going to start with you from the Kinexus standpoint. This is a very specific talent-driven program aimed at a specific age group. Talk about that.
Yeah, so we're really focused on Gen Z and really looking at that 16 to 24-year-old range. Those students coming out of high school and those young adults really looking for a good career path in manufacturing and logistics.
And as you look at the demand, I mentioned 20,000 jobs, a lot of job openings in industries that pay well above the average.
Oh, yeah, well above the average. Great benefits, health care, and then career opportunities. It really aligns with the mindset and characteristics of Generation Z. Mm-hmm. They want to see that opportunity for growth. They want to be able to use their technical skills.
So talk about, if you would, the need for awareness out there, because I think that's continues to be a big issue that folks just don't know of the available opportunities.
Yeah, we've said for a long time, these are not your parents' manufacturing jobs. They're high tech. Indiana's advanced manufacturing logistics industry, totally using technology, Internet of Things, automation, robotics. There's so much going on, and we need to let these students know. We know at Ivy Tech because we offer the programs, but they're not seeing them. We're not enrolling in the numbers needed to fill this gap that manufacturers and logistics companies have in Indiana. And as you said, we're the number one manufacturing intensive state. Yeah. So the more we can raise the veil, show how cool, high tech, interesting these jobs are, the more we'll be able to attract and fill that pipeline.
And you mentioned the programs that Ivy Tech offers and others too, but these are very specific. These industries are very tech driven that a lot of people don't realize too, that you've got to have the training.
We actually are the first community college in the country to start a smart manufacturing and digital integration associate degree. It is designed by industry, for industry, and it'll stand up this fall. Mm-hmm. But letting and getting that word out to those young adults, high school students, who would love these jobs and these great career opportunities that are awaiting them.
Brad, talk about how this program is going to work. I know a website is a big part of the effort here and really connecting directly with folks around the state.
Yeah, so we're looking at a website and a social media. Social media, we're hitting on Instagram and YouTube, but to your point, that website is going to be critical. It really helps. You can go through and understand, are you a maker or are you a mover? And it really guides you into the career opportunities and paths and into the education that you may need and how to get there.
Yeah, so this is a website, but this is a very specific. You can get in there and really kind of learn a little bit more about who you are and what you might want to pursue.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to ask you, do you like robots? It's going to ask you, what would you take to you on an island, or where would you go to find the new technologies? It really wants you to kind of think about your role as a person and then how you fit in our industries.
And Ivy Tech, obviously, very much a statewide footprint, so you really connect with communities around the state. This is very much a statewide initiative that has the potential to impact communities in every corner of the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Ivy Tech, Vincennes, we have, and there's other partners included in higher mm-hmm. education on this program. We're all about making sure that we have the programs that our employers need and that are the great futures. So we mm-hmm. want good careers, and we want to fill the pipeline, and we're going to do that on 19 campuses across Indiana.
In your view, because to me, the risk of not doing this I think is substantial to the economy, because if these jobs go unfilled, these companies are not able to grow, and they're going to be potentially looking elsewhere to do what they want to do.
Well, or what even makes is worse for my old job as lieutenant governor is worrying that we'll recruit people from out of state and Hoosiers will be left behind. Mm-hmm. These are great careers. We know that Gen Zers have the characteristics of really liking the tech and the mm-hmm. stability and the future that's here. So it's a great program. Yeah. I'd encourage anybody watching, get on there for yourself and your kids, and just check out this Make and Move site. It's pretty phenomenal.
Make and Move is the initiative that has just launched from Conexus Indiana. Dr. Sue Elsterman, the president of Ivy Tech Community College, Brad Rohr, chief talent program officer at Conexus. Thank you both for joining us.
You're welcome.
Good
Appreciate
luck with the program.
High school athletes throughout Indiana are gearing up for a 2021 fall sports season that will look quite a bit different than last year's. IHSAA Commissioner Paul Neidig previewed the season on Inside Indiana Sports.
Looking back, I want to talk about the year ahead, but as you look back a year ago, a lot of question marks about whether high school sports would be able to be conducted. But amazingly, as you look at it, it did happen. As you look at that experience, all the state tournaments that took place, what's your big takeaway from how that was able to happen last year here in Indiana?
For me, it was it once again put a spotlight on the importance of team. It was not one individual that allowed last fall to happen and us to turn the light back on, so to speak, and allow kids an opportunity to participate. It was the state working together, and from Governor Holcomb's office to the Department of Education and Dr. Box's team and the Indiana High School Athletic Association. And then you think about what had to happen at a district level, with the number of counties that we have, the number of different schools. This year we have 407 schools, and every school is different. And what works within one community may not work in another. And so we allowed a lot of leeway for schools to make adjustments to what fit their community. And again, it was just the ability for the team to work together. And then just so grateful to have an opportunity for kids to be able to play again.
As you look now heading into the fall sports season, ready to kick off literally here in a matter of days, I think the expectation things back to normal, but yet with the Delta variant, what we're seeing going on around the country, how are you looking at this fall sports season?
Yeah, and we adopted a philosophy a year ago that we're going to take 2-week segments, and we're not going to try to long range plan because COVID didn't permit us to do so. When we still find ourselves in that scenario, but we're hoping for a return to normal, or as normal as it can be this fall. We certainly know that we have to watch what's going on and the positivity rate in the state of Indiana, and know that we may have to adjust. Mm-hmm. But we're planning for a full season. We're planning for a season that looks as normal as it possibly can, but we'll make appropriate decisions along the way that need to be made to keep people safe.
Talk about, in your view, the importance of high school athletics to communities. There's a financial piece to it, but just in terms of that community piece and the connecting of people in schools and communities around the state.
Yeah, when we learned in 2020, we had to shut things down. Human beings are, as we all are, unique, but they like to be with each other. And the ability to go out to a Friday night game and mm-hmm. and talk to your neighbor that you haven't seen, or maybe your high school teammate, and mm-hmm. and reconnect, and at the same time you're supporting the kids that have their turn to put the jersey on. And I think just to have people and communities to be able to gather, Friday night football games or multiple fall events, whether it be soccer or volleyball or golf or tennis, it just gives gives people an opportunity to be together, and that's what human beings crave. We certainly know that.
Yeah. So basically, for student athletes, for their families and fans, as you look at this fall season, it's back to normal, but again, taking it on a week by week basis.
Absolutely. We're going to take our time. We're going to make sure we make just in time and appropriate decisions to keep people safe. But we also need people to continue to stay vigilant about being safe and following the proper protocol, so these kids this year can have their turn at putting that uniform on.
A lot of people around the state very excited to get high school sports back on the docket. Paul Neidig, the IHSAA commissioner, thanks very much for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
All right.
And finally this week, Black Restaurant Week Midwest Indianapolis is part of a nationwide organization responsible for celebrating the flavors of African American, African, and Caribbean cuisine. National Food and Beverage Manager Alicia Hightower and Oya Woodruff, owner of Chef Oya's The Trap, came on the show to detail the group's palate-pleasing No Crumb Left Behind campaign.
Alicia, I know you're coming to us from Kansas City and you're part of the national organization. Give us a thumbnail description of Black Restaurant Week, founded 6 years ago, really what the mission of Black Restaurant Restaurant Week is.
Absolutely. What our mission is definitely to bring awareness, brand awareness, and additional economic stimulus to these businesses that are sometimes overlooked and unnoticed. We have our, like you stated, No Crumb Left Behind, where our goal this year is to help 1,000 culinary businesses across the nation through our marketing efforts and campaigns.
And certainly the restaurant business is always a challenging business, no matter the timing. But the pandemic obviously put additional stress. And then when you look at the failure rate, some of the hurdles that Black-owned restaurants are faced with, that really adds to the situation.
Oh, absolutely. So many of these businesses have started their business with using personal savings, you know, help from family and friends to get it off the ground. So they don't have that extra budget that is needed to properly market their businesses locally and definitely not on a national level. So that's where we come in.
Yeah. And certainly Black Restaurant Week is running through the weekend, so you still have time to get there. And one of the restaurants participating here in Indianapolis is Chef Oya's The Trap. Oya Woodruff, give us a thumbnail description of your restaurant there at 34th and Keystone. I know you're getting very close to 5 years in business, so you're coming up on a milestone.
We are coming up at a milestone. We'll reach 5 years at the beginning of 2022. We are a locally owned seafood restaurant here in Indianapolis. We do a boil style seafood tray, and one of our specialties, or the thing that makes us The Trap, is our trap butter. And it's a house made butter sauce that comes in 5 flavors that you can slather all over the seafood of your choosing.
That sounds very good. Give us an idea that the restaurant business is very competitive and a challenging business. What has it been like for your business to survive during the and through the pandemic?
Gratefully, we have survived. We've had some hurdles. We've had some challenges. Food costs is exorbitantly high right now. however, with campaigns like Black Restaurant Week and the huge amount of support that we get here on a local level is just really amazing. We partner with several local businesses to do businesses both. You know, they use our ingredients. A lot of businesses use trap butter in their things, and we also partner with a couple of other restaurants here in the city. So as long as we keep the ball rolling and just partner up with each other, and we get great support, and it's been wonderful to see.
Yeah. Alicia, as you look at the landscape, Indianapolis, I think, was your first market for this Black Restaurant Week around the country. But you're in 15 or 16 markets now and locations. So this is really spread. So you feel that there is a real impact that you're having, and you're impacting some of these restaurants around the country.
Huge, huge impact. Absolutely huge. Like I was explaining to you earlier, Indianapolis was our very first Midwest city. And last year, 2020, when we celebrated 5 years, even though it was in the middle of a pandemic, we introduced regional campaigns because we wanted to have a farther net to reach. So we wanted to include the whole state of Indiana, not just Indianapolis, you know, the whole state of Missouri, not just Kansas City. So that is really how big and massive the campaign has gotten and how many more people we're able to help.
What can folks expect? Black Restaurant Week extends through the weekend here in Indianapolis. What can folks expect when they sample some of these Black restaurants? Special menus, special deals, any of those types of things?
Yes. All of them have, all the participating restaurants will have specials. They also have a bingo card that's really fun. The community can go and they can actually patronize multiple businesses in a very fun, interactive way and have the chance to win $500. But you can go to our website at www.blackrestaurantweeks.com to find all the participating restaurants and their special menu offerings.
All right. Alicia Hightower, National Food and Beverage Manager with Black Restaurants Week. Also, Oya Woodruff, the owner of Chef Oya's The Trap. Hey, good luck, Chef Oya, especially in continuing on to that 5-year anniversary. And folks can get out and check out that that great butter right through the weekend and beyond.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, ladies.
That wraps up this week's Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.